This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. Photographer Nan Golden is known for her pictures of outsiders, people often shunned by mainstream society, like drag queens, sex workers, patients with AIDS. These photos broke new ground because it's clear she wasn't just a voyeur showing up to capture the demi-monde. She was part of the community, and she often included herself when documenting the scene. Her work is held in major museums around the world, the Louvre, the Guggenheim, the Metropolitan Museum of Art. So when she began a campaign to shame those very museums, it was a big deal. That's Nan Golden and a group of activists holding a demonstration in 2018 inside what was once the Sackler Wing at the Met. They threw empty pill bottles in a pool. They staged a die-in by collapsing on the floor. The Sackler family owns Purdue Pharma, which made $10 billion off OxyContin after pushing it to doctors and lying about its addictive properties. Since OxyContin came onto the market, more than 500,000 people have died of an opioid overdose in this country. And they're still dying, some 200 people every day. Nan Golden's campaign to get museums and universities like Harvard to remove the Sackler name from their buildings came after she became addicted to OxyContin. She was prescribed the drug for a wrist injury.
I went from 3 pills a day as prescribed to 18. The drug, like all drugs, lost its effect, so I picked up the straw. My life revolved entirely around getting and using Oxy. Counting and recounting, crushing and snorting, was my full-time job.
A new film by Laura Poitras tells the twin story of Nan Golden's activism against the Sackler family and her personal journey as an artist. Laura Poitras is best known for her Academy Award-winning documentary on Edward Snowden and the NSA surveillance program Citizen 4. This movie about Nan Golden is called All the Beauty and the Bloodshed. And just a note for how and where you listen to this conversation, we will be talking about sex work, domestic violence, and suicide. Laura Poitras, welcome back to Press Play.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, it's great to have you. And so as I understand it, this movie is actually a collaboration between you and Nan Golden. And as we just heard, she narrates her life story as we look at her photographs. And then the present day activist and protest scenes are told in a more straightforward documentary style, a third person style. How did you come to this way of making this movie?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. As you said in your introduction to Nan's work, you know, her photographs are very much made with the people who she photographs, and she's part of those communities. And, you know, we felt very strongly that this film had to have that approach to it. And also, it's a film that Nan began. Before I was filming, Nan and Payne were documenting their actions against the Sacklers in museums. So it was, you know, absolutely imperative always that Nan would be a collaborator on this film. And it's, you know, it's so deeply personal that it's the only way the film, I think, would have been possible.
Yeah, well, she's so frank about her family history and her history of abuse by a former boyfriend, even her sex work. Right. I think for the first time, she says she opens up about being a sex worker and working for a madam in New York. How did she agree to be so open, or why did she want to be so open about these extremely personal parts of her life?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, or anyone who knows her work, that also Nan's work is unfiltered and deeply personal about her life. So she's been making artwork herself about her life for decades, for over 5 decades. And then in terms of the process of the film, we started doing these audio interviews, and they were really emotionally deep and intense, and that happened really quickly. And, you know, we talked about, you know, things that she hasn't talked about before, as you say, the sex work, and she just felt strongly that it was the time to talk about it, and with the, you know, intention of destigmatizing, right? That there's so much stigma around sex work, or so much stigma around drug use, or so much stigma around domestic violence, etc. And that I think she just felt very strongly that, that this film could also destigmatize those issues.
Right. And so were you friends before? She had to have trusted you with these stories.
We knew each other. We had met when I was traveling with my film Citizen Four. So we had met and she knew my work. So there was, I think, a lot of mutual respect.
I see. Okay. So she grew up in this stifling, I guess, post-war suburbia in outside Maryland. And her sister, if you could talk about her relationship, she had a very close relationship with her sister who was sent away, I guess, to a mental institution.
Yeah.
And then killed herself when she was 18.
Yeah. So this is one of the most painful parts of the film. And she did make a piece about her sister, Barbara. It was called Sister Saints and Sibyls, and so, as an installation. And I saw that as I was working on the film, and I was just emotionally devastated for days after, and talked to her. I said, is this, you know, would she be open to including her sister in the film? And she agreed with the sense of like the importance of both her story being told. And, you know, it is, as you say, it's a family story, but it's also a story about the sort of stifling nature of American society too, right? And how, mm-hmm. you know, 50s, 60s, like to be a woman, to be sexual, to be rebellious, that these are all things that were stigmatized. And in some cases, people were institutionalized for, and to, you know, include that in the film. So yeah, her sister was institutionalized many times. And there's a line in the film where after she killed herself, her mother says, you know, tell the children it was an accident. And Nan says that's where it clicked, you know, the sort of denialism. Hopefully the film is kind of shedding a light on the kind of larger social forces that deny people's realities, deny people's truths, put people away who are, you know, rocking the boat, troublemakers, outsiders, etc.
Right. And the history of pharmaceuticals intertwined with that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in the 50s and 60s, you had the pharmaceutical industry pushing drugs on unhappy women at home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pushing drugs. I mean, lobotomies were popular. You know, it was a dark,
right.
dark time, really dark time.
Yeah. And then to have that sort of revisited with the OxyContin story, too.
Right, and sort of, you know, different sets of historical circumstances, but it,
right.
as the film kind of lays out, the original Sackler family, there are three brothers, and Arthur Sackler is kind of the older brother and kind of crafted this approach towards pharmaceuticals where he was advertising drugs to doctors. And he did that very successfully with Valium and created this blueprint that then his other brothers sort of take on when they released OxyContin. Unfortunately, they were allowed to continue to do this for decades.
Yeah. And so rewinding a little bit back to Nan's history, and I just want to reiterate to people who haven't seen the movie, to our listeners, that this is, it's so interesting how you have two strands happening at the same time of the story in the movie. So you have Nan's history and how she became a celebrated artist, and then you have her, the present day of her activism. So I want to go back to that strand. She moves to New York in 1978 and is photographing her friends, and they're all pretty much in the underground, right? They're drag queens and artists and all that. Did she think then that she would be a professional photographer?
I mean, you know, I talked to Nan a lot when we were making the film about the sort of language of like pioneers and outsiders and rebels. And, you know, her, I think, feeling about the people, her friends and her community were like, they were just not interested in the status quo. One of my favorite chapters in the film is around Tin Pan Alley, this bar in Times Square, which is this women-run space, and where she really gets supported by Maggie Smith, who's the bar owner. And it's just like, it's a totally different world than where you think of, you know, you come to New York and you try to find a gallery and you, you know, try to show and, you know, the work and, you know, elite institutions, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, Nan has done that in her career, but I don't think it was what drove her. I think she was driven to by something maybe a bit more pure in terms of being an artist and the community of people that she was with. Yeah, I think she was mm-hmm. always an artist. I mean, she was making art in her teens. As soon as she got a camera, she was, I think, fully on the path of, you know, dedicating her life to art making.
And you said you did audio interviews with her. Was that a way to, I don't know, have a different kind of intimacy with her as she's telling these very frank stories rather than have her talk on camera?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. There's no way we would have had the level of intimacy that's in the film if we had a camera, which probably would have also, I mean, I could have shot alone, but then it's very hard to shoot and speak, you know, to engage in an interview. It just would have been so much less mm-hmm. intimate.
Right. So one of the series of photographs that's very shocking is the series of photographs, and I guess it's a slideshow, actually, that she creates. It's called The Ballad of Sexual Dependency, mm-hmm. which she created in 1985. And this is when she documents her own domestic abuse at the hands of her boyfriend. And there's a part in your interview where you can hear you actually shocked that he had decided, well, he punched her in the face, but not just in her face, but in her eyes.
Right. Yeah. So these photographs are well known. They're, as you say, part of the Ballad of Sexual Dependency. And in the film, you know, she describes the story of, you know, there's a night in a hotel room and he just kept going for her eyes. And it just felt like that was something that was so cruel. But in terms of that part of the film, that was also, you know, this is an example of how the collaboration with Nan was so important, that when we did the first edit of the film, we talked about that act of violence, but then she was like, it's really important that we also show the love story of the relationship, that there be an understanding of that. Otherwise, it just felt just about the violence, and that mm-hmm. you know, wasn't fully truthful to her experience. And she took the photographs both as a way to remind herself not to go back to the relationship, but that also people would see those photographs and be able to talk about domestic abuse. You know, this society is very successful at placing shame and on people who are struggling, and yet where the shame actually belongs someplace else. So, like, you know, so for instance, the Sacklers, the shame doesn't belong on the people who use drugs. It actually belongs on the Sackler family, the profiteers. I mean, Ananda says it in the film that you know, the wrong things are kept secret, and that destroys people in the society. And I think that's true.
And it's truly remarkable looking at the activism, how successful it was in a relatively short period of time. Just a handful of activists, mm-hmm. she and this group called PAIN, which stands for Prescription Addiction Intervention Now, they staged these protests, and all of these huge institutions, the Louvre, the Met, have mm-hmm. basically acceded to their demands and removing the Sackler name from their wings, right?
Yeah, but it didn't happen overnight.
At
first, you know, they did a big demonstration at the Met. The Met pretended it didn't exist. I think the museums for a while were like, okay, let's pretend this is, you know, not happening, and or think it's just a PR problem. And PAIN were very persistent. And ultimately, you're right. You know, the first wave of it, they succeed in getting the museums to stop taking more money, future money from the Sacklers, which was a victory. But you know, as Megan in the film says, like, it wasn't good enough for us. We wanted the names off the museums, and that took 4 years. It took 4 years mm-hmm. for these museums to say, like, no, we're not going to allow this kind of, you know, whitewashing of blood money in the museum space. But it took a while.
Do you think it would have happened had Nan Goldin not been involved?
I don't think it would have happened. And I, you know, I've talked to like the investigative journalists who've been on the story. So Patrick Radden Keefe, who you meet in the film, and Barry Meyer, who works with the New York Times, was one of the first journalists to report about the crisis of what was happening with OxyContin in the early 2000s. They all say it was like that PAIN, and what PAIN did and what Nan did was like a tipping point. It's like the evidence was so vast, and yet their names were still on the museums. They were still invited to all the sort of whatever, New York and London. And I think it really was the work of pain to really shift the shame onto them, to the family, to make it impossible for them to maintain their position in these institutions. Yeah.
Well, they have maintained a lot of their fortune.
They have maintained a lot of their fortune. Exactly. They haven't. Right. And so this is like the kind of bittersweet thing. It's like the film does show victories, and yet it also shows the cruelty of American society, the fact that, you know, they buy themselves out of future legal cases, you know, by shopping around for a bankruptcy judge and et cetera. I mean, it's still a very dark story about lack of accountability.
And so the title, All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, it's comes from Nan's sister, from a journal that she kept. Can you describe that title and why you decided to use it and where it came from?
Yeah, so it's not from a journal. So the title of the film comes from a document of one of the institutions where Barbara was institutionalized. There was, she was given a Rorschach test, and the person who was taking notes of her responses wrote down, she sees the future and all the beauty and the bloodshed. And so it's a longer quote, but, you know, there's so much cruelty and bloodshed in the film, but also there are these, you know, incredible acts of resistance and beauty of, you know, people rejecting the rules of the game and the status quo and fighting, and in some cases winning. Those are the voices that I really care about.
Well, congratulations on the movie. It really is a beautiful film. So thanks for making it.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. That's Academy Award-winning filmmaker Laura Poitras talking about her new documentary, All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, about the artist and activist Nan Golden. The film is being shown in select theaters in cities across the country. Here in Los Angeles, it's at the AMC Sunset 5. Coming up, how Christianity saved Johnny Cash and influenced some of his greatest hits. That's next on Press Play.